can get her off my mind. She's one of a kind.
It was at school, really, when the Voice was given a chance, when people like, yo, sing that Boys to Men, End of the Road, and I'd always go for the hardest notes.
He discovered his musical gifts pretty early in life, and from there, full speed ahead.
To not follow your dreams and your true inner child that's calling out, you can find yourself stifled in your adult life, you know?
Now, decades later, with so many unexpected accolades, he's still performing, but now it's for the love.
It's nice, the accolades, and they're beautiful, and you can always look at them. What are you doing today? That's all that matters right now, you know what I'm saying?
Now, an international music star, Craig David, on The Pulse.
With the main man, Bill Anderson, it's going to be a nice chat, man. Very good vibes.
Guys, welcome to another episode of The Pulse. You know what we do. Every time we are here, we're bringing in people who have cool stories, they're doing amazing things, and they have agreed to spend some time with us. Today is no different. We have an international recording star who joins us, Mr. Craig David. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Bill. How are you, brother?
I'm doing well. I appreciate it. I got to tell you, this is just us talking.
Yeah.
Every time I interview somebody with the smooth accent like that, like forget the fact that you can sing and do the whole performance. I sit back and I'm like, yo, I need an accent.
Do you know what though? It's the funny. It's the flip when you're from the UK. So people will say, "Wow, he's got the smooth American accent." It's always the thing that you haven't got, right?
Okay, I guess we don't get that a lot in Philly. Like nobody sits back and goes, "Oh, the Philadelphia."
Jump on a plane, drop yourself in London. They're gonna be like, "Whoa, where are you from?" You'll get the same love.
I like
Trust
it.
Me.
I appreciate it. Well, thank you taking time out of your schedule. We appreciate it. So
my pleasure, brother.
Like, you've been doing this for a minute. I'm going back and kind of doing research. But interesting story. So tell us how you got started in the whole entertainment industry.
Wow. Okay, to try and give you like a shortened version is I started DJing from a young age in a small place called Southampton, a city in the bottom of the UK. That developed into me writing songs. I then recorded one of my first songs in a studio with a gentleman called Mark Hill. And one song was called Rewind with the Artful Dodger, which was the first song we released. And that was a number two charting single in the UK. Mm-hmm. And that led on to me finishing an album with him called Born to Do It. And that album then spawned Fill Me In, 7 Days, Walking Away, and songs that then changed my life. And then it's been a journey from then to now, really.
It's been an amazing journey. Now, your father was a musician, so that's how you first got into it?
Yeah, so my father was a bass guitarist in a roots revival reggae group called Ebony Rockers. So he was always introducing me to reggae music, and in particular guitar. And I think that's why I kind of gravitate to guitar in particular is the main instrument that I have in a lot of what weaves its way into my music from an early age. But it was at school, really, when the Voice was given a chance, when people like, yo, sing that Boys to Men, End of the Road. And I'd always go for the hardest notes to try and sing and then test myself. And I got to a point where I was like, I must have something, because everyone comes, Craig, can you sing? And can you sing this song? Can you sing that? So I was like, I get it.
So just a comfort level. I ask these kind of things because I grew up in radio. My father worked in radio. And I feel like when you have that from a young age with family and whatnot, there's a different level of fear, I guess, that other people are afraid of a lot of those things. And you just always had a mic or a guitar or, you know, DJing. That was just kind of your thing.
Yeah, it was funny because I feel like I was always leaning into music in some shape or form. Like I was making mixtapes when I was 13, 14 years old. So I would always be trying to, how can I raise some money so I can go and buy some records so I can then make some more mixtapes and sell them and then go and play out and DJ. So, or buy a piece of equipment. So I feel like having that support system there from my mom and my dad, and also them just trusting me as a teenager just to follow my dreams and support that, I feel was really important, that they encouraged me just to, look, we know that you love music, so go do your thing. We're here.
So it was the beginning thing. Like, you wanted this from a young age. You knew this was you, and you put in the grind from a young age.
Yeah, I always wanted to. It's just sometimes the circumstances around you, maybe the academic element was something that I found I was rubbing up against with when I went to college. Because in college, when I was in the library and everyone's like, whoa, you're studying like crazy. I'm like, nah, I'm making mixtape covers and using the computer and the printer cartridges to do my thing. So, but it was so focused for me. So I kind of found there was a bit of a tug and pull moment where I was like, I know I should kind of be doing this logically, left brain, academic, make sure you get your grades, do your things, do everything you've been told. But my heart was telling me, I need to spend time doing this music thing. And I'm grateful that I followed my heart, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's lots of millions of people who are grateful that you followed your heart.
Appreciate it.
And didn't go off. I'm trying to think who the last person I was talking to who said that they were, you know, almost going to go the accountant path. And it was a strong pull. And they finally just were like, yeah, I got to follow my heart. It's amazing how many of those stories exist with people who walk away from the safe thing for the dream thing.
Yeah. And the thing is, I have the utmost respect across the board of whatever it might be your pull. So if you want to do the accountant or the lawyer, that might be your passion, and you can have an incredible career doing that. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to have an accountant that does my accounts great. I want a lawyer who does his law. I don't want him to be telling me he's doing singing on the weekend and we'll have it.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? So I respect it, but I feel like to not follow your dreams and your true inner child that's calling out, you can find yourself stifled in your adult life, you know?
For people who, in your career for outsiders, and I don't know if that was a USA thing, if that's a UK thing, it felt like it happened really fast. When I went back and did the kind of research and looking at, you know, some of the records and lists and things that you still have, it seemed like it happened fast to us. But was there a big break moment for you when you're like, okay, this is what I'm doing, I got this?
Yeah, it was many years leading up to that moment. So I was 18 when it really broke through with the Artful Dodger and that song Rewind. Mm-hmm. So it would have started from 14, and all of those mixtapes and all of the DJing and all the MCing and honing my craft as an artist and just taking risks. And I think that when it hit was the moment where I remember walking up the high street in Southampton where all the shops would be, or the precinct, I guess it would be. I'm not sure. What would it be? High street in the States too, right? Where all your shops,
Main street.
But main, there we go.
Yeah.
There we go. And I remember walking up there and that was just home to me. That was normal to me. But there was a moment when the first song hit and I was now on TV and I was on radio that I could no longer walk up that same road that I knew so well. And even friends that I knew, who were close friends, we grew up at school, would run up to me and be like, yo, can I get a picture? Can I get an autograph for my sister? And I'm like, bro,
yeah.
You live down the road. Like, when did this? And I knew something had changed. And it was the change of my life changing for the better in a lot of ways, but also the end of a chapter of me being the local boy from Southampton. So amazing.
Right. It's like, yo, we cut class together. Like, why are you getting new? Like, all of a sudden, we got to take pictures. Like, we were hollering at the same people.
Yeah, like, bro, like we used to, like, wasn't it only like a few weeks back that we were like talking about going to this club or going to this thing? Or it was just, I think there's something about then, which is a bit different now with social media. But once you're on the other side of a TV set and someone's in their living room seeing you on the TV, and then they think of all of the people they've seen on the TV, like throughout their lives, it hit differently. So even though I felt a piece of me was getting slightly taken away, because I wanted to be the local boy, you know, we're boys, you know, like, right. I know you. But then I realized, well, like Jenny from the block, you can try and keep it as real as you're real, but we're not here anymore.
Right.
We're out the block. So.
So it felt like, in some ways, it felt like overnight success to you too. Even though you had been putting in the grind for a while, it just hit fast.
Yeah, it's like One of my favorite movies is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, the original.
Okay.
And it's that moment when Charlie actually gets the golden ticket, where he's dreaming about it. It's like every day, like thinking about this. It's like, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And through all the adversity, it's going to happen. And then when it happens, I felt that same thing where it's like the greatness of all of that work, everything happening, but manifesting before my eyes was hard for me to process as a teenager. I was like, whoa, how am I doing 3 nights sold out at Wembley Arena? 13,000 people a night. How am I doing that? How has the song gone to number one? How has the 7 days gone to number one? Walking Away, the album's number one. How am I now rubbing shoulders with Destiny's Child and Jennifer Lopez? And I'm thinking, I've still got the pictures on my wall of these people.
Right.
I still have Jennifer Lopez on my wall. I have Destiny's Child on my wall. So it was so hard to process that I felt there was a slight inkling of imposter syndrome kicking in, of someone's going to pull the rug at some point from underneath my feet and this whole bubble's going to burst. And I think that was something I had to process over many years to realize, you know what? Nah, it was through the grind and through God's gift of being able to give me a voice and stick in there. So I'm grateful for everything.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you worked for it. Like nobody gave it to you, and that whole ability to appreciate it. But with that being said, and as you're telling the story, and I mean this with the most respect possible, because I'm not surprised when I looked at some of the lists and the sales and things that I saw. But I saw an MTV poll that had you voted as the number two album of all time behind Thriller.
Yeah, I know.
And when you sit back and look at that, like I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, but you do sit back and go, wow. Like I knew he was big, but wow. It's like Thriller and you. Mm. Like, did you have that moment?
Absolutely, brother. I mean, I grew up listening to Michael Jackson and that period of time of that, the superstar status. I mean, Moonwalker and that, when that hit, or seeing the moonwalk and just anything that was sort of around those periods of time where it was like the Princes of the world, and thankfully Stevie Wonder shining his light still, and the Madonnas, and just what it was, just a different time. So when you have like my debut album being anywhere near Michael Jackson's Thriller, and it to be a poll that was from the people,
right?
It wasn't like me gassing it up and me trying to like, yo, look at me trying to tell you a story. It was from the people. It just was really special. And I remember meeting Quincy Jones, and him saying that Michael had picked up maybe 10, 15 copies of this and given it out to all of his friends. And for me, I was like, this is wild. Yeah. How would Michael Jackson even know who I am, let alone giving it to his friends? So a lot of pinch me moments along the way, but yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. And those moments, that same album was one of the 50 best-selling, again, of all time, 8 million copies. You know, and that's before you're doing all the streaming and everything else. And I read somewhere it's now billions of streams. Like so is it settled in now, or are you still living the dream?
Do you know what, it's the, as I said earlier, the imposter syndrome of someone's going to pull the rug from underneath my feet, that now I've integrated and I'm whole in myself to know, I know what I bring to the table. I know there's a divine source channeling its way through me. And as long as I get out of the way, I can spread the message through the melodies, through the lyrics. But living the dream every single day, brother. When I wake up and I'm 24 years now from originally it dropping the album, and we talk here, me and you, for us to have this conversation, for me, is still living the dream, that we're talking about music and talking about a career, not a one-hit wonder and just an album or just a song. And I'm just every day blessed. And when you take that first breath in the morning and you wake up and your eyes are open and thankfully your friends, family are cool and you're healthy, you're blessed every day, brother.
So still loving it. Now, you talked about Wembley, you know, doing sold out stadium tours and things like that. But on the other end of it, you've done the, you know, tower suite, you know, and having kind of intimate concerts in your place, like in your mm-hmm. like inviting people in. Is that a different vibe? Like, why would you change and do things like that in some of the smaller venues?
Yeah, so when I moved over to Miami, which was around 2010, I was living the dream of Miami, you know, and everything that comes with it. And I got to the point when going to the clubs there, that I just felt that there was this slight elitism of, here's a red rope. If you're inside the red rope in VIP, somehow there was some kind of echelon that goes on inside of that, that you were bigger, better, more important than the people who are on the other side. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't landing for me, that, because I'd be in there and people spilling drinks all over me and I couldn't hear what they're saying. And they're praying to this wooden table with a vodka bottle on it. Whereas the people outside were having the time of their life, going over to the bar, having a couple shots, could go to the restroom real easy. And I was like, this I'm seeing clearly. So I was like, okay, what if I could take this and bring it into my home, which was called Tower Suite 5, and throw my own house party and make everyone feel that everyone's VIP. Food on lock, drinks on tap. I'll host the party. I'll make sure I get on the mic and give you a shout out. I'll play a tune, any tune you want. I probably won't play mine because I felt it was a bit cringe. But sometimes when a pretty woman comes up to you and says, can you give me one verse of 7 days? You say, I might have to just, yeah, yeah. You know.
You got to do
a quick little, yeah. You know what I mean?
A little something,
you know what I mean? Just to set the tone. And it turned into something now that I go out and I'm doing. We did Glastonbury here in the UK, which is like 100,000 people, to this a TS5 themed house party DJ stroke performance. So it's been an amazing journey.
So that's still cool. You still like the smaller kind of intimate setting, yeah. And getting a chance to actually interact with people.
Totally. There's something about when you're in a larger venue, you still only can really see the first few rows. So that's really what you're interacting with, which is always intimate. I always find that even in an arena or a stadium, it's still intimate. If you actually are in an intimate venue and you can actually then see a few more rows back and you just see people engaged, like you can tell when a song hits and you know where they were and who they're with. And that feeling they got, and the smile, and them singing the words back. I mean, what recognition? What more could you ask for? You know?
Yeah, it's cool though, because by the time you started doing the whole Tower Suite, I mean, this was after you talked about. This is after the Michael Jackson ranking. This is after rubbing shoulders, you know, with all the different people you worked with. Yeah. So that had to be received, or you tell me, like. I feel like that would be received by people like, wow, like this dude's like sitting there hanging out with us when he could be playing the stadium.
Yeah, you know, do you know one of the things that I feel served me really well throughout my career is to recognize all the accolades, and I'm very grateful and I take pride in those things and they're beautiful. But to ask yourself the question, what are you doing today? Like my relevance really is us having this conversation today, even though it's not me performing, mm-hmm. but how I land in this, engaging you as another human being in this conversation, rather than it just being backs and forwards and just, you know, I'm going to tell you about my story, or I'm going to try and get you to come to a show, or I'm going to try and sell something to you, yeah. That we can vibe, but then also to just recognize that it lands at a point at which you look back at all of the things that go on, and you hope that you're connecting deeply with people. I think that's kind of the litmus test of all of this, because you can do the big things, but then you can also sometimes miss how important the smaller, intricate things are. So this is really important to me, like us doing this, and it makes every day then special, you know?
And is that part of, so you're doing the 7 days commitment tour. Okay, and moving around, it makes sense, right? Just 7 dates in the United States for this tour. One of them here in Philly on May 15th at the Fillmore, which is a really cool spot, but it also falls into that more, you know, intimate kind of a stadium and an arena. You don't have to do this. Like, you don't have to tour. Like, you don't, Like, so you're still doing this just because you still love doing it? Like, tell me about this tour and why.
I really wanted to land the songs for a lot of the fans who've been saying, when are you coming back to the States? That's, I see, that's the beautiful thing with social media. You can actually see where people are caught shouting you out for them. And they're like, yo, when are you coming back to do this? And what they're gravitating towards with new and old music. And I was like, if I can do a tour, which really, especially coming out with my full band, which I just feel, there's something special about a live full band show. I think it just hits differently. And then also to do venues, which you feel that you're up close and personal. So you go away with it like, you know what? That was different than what we might experience if we'd gone over to Europe or we come over to the UK for shows over here. And also, which is kind of leading off from the last question, is that what served me well, which I kind of slightly digressed, was that I was there and then I went left and I was like, yo, I was supposed to land something and I didn't actually land it.
We're just talking. We get back to it.
Yeah, it was that, is to recognize that what you're doing right now is your relevancy. So I don't want to keep talking so much or drilling it into people's heads like, yo, I sold 30 million albums and this is my number ones and this. Because when I've walked into the studio with young producers, they're like, this is great. Like, my older brother, sister, they were like, show me your album, I'm vibing. And I'm like, cool. But I need to come on that microphone right now and show you what this whole thing is about right here, right now. Okay. And doing that and then hearing them be like, oh, Craig, you still got it. You still got it. You get a moment where you flipped from being like, okay, that was like back in 2000 to you're here right now. And I feel like that's something that served me well for any artist or aspiring artist who's been there for a while. Just, it's nice, the accolades, and they're beautiful and you can always look at them. What are you doing today? Hey, that's all that matters right now. You know what I'm saying?
I feel like that, like, these shows have no problem selling out. So these conversations are just conversations. Like, it's not like you have to do a promotional tour. The Fillmore is going to sell out. Like, people are going to be there to come and support. So you just enjoy this. Just enjoy interacting with people. Just enjoy talking to people. Because I have talked to, real talk, you know, I've talked to people who, they will do the interview if you get a little bit closer to the date and the tickets aren't selling. And it is a, all right, man, I'm fine. We'll talk about it. And you do, like, you have still loving this energy.
Yeah, I feel like I've been very blessed to have achieved a lot of the dreams and aspirations that I always hoped that I could get anywhere close to when I started off. And I feel like the real difference is that rather than kind of defining any of my success by numbers or defining it by where we are in the chart or how many streams, or is actually getting down to these moments, as I said before, of me speaking to you, Bill, and being like, we're here together and I'm getting to learn about you, and you spoke about your father being a radio DJ for, and what he's done bringing you through to, I love that, because it means that now we're real time, we're connecting, and it's not the, like I said, the sell, you know, it's like, yeah, oh, he's gonna be on, I'm gonna ask him the thing, he's gonna try and sell it, we know what we're here, we're talking about the tour and stuff, but I just love the human part of it. And then you meet people on tour and they tell you an anecdote about when they got married to one of your songs, or they had their first child to one of your tunes, and you're just like, wow.
you went baby making music on them.
That's the vibe.
Okay, when you are that open and talking to people and doing intimate settings, in 2022 you wrote a memoir, kind of sharing information and putting things out there. You've talked about, now, as much as you were dedicated and had this success, and like, there were, you know, bullying challenges, there were things that you dealt with to get to this point. Why share that?
I feel there comes also a point when someone's ready, that by sharing your personal experiences to others allows other people to have an opportunity to be seen and also find solace or lean into some of the advice and wisdom that you may be sharing? Because there's a real fine line. I never want to preach to people about things because I feel like there's a variety of methods and ways to do things. But if I can share my stories, and I think that's what resonates with people, the music and give context, but then also we can talk about imposter syndrome, saying yes when you really mean no, having a lack of boundaries, mental health, depression, bullying. I feel like when people see an artist, which back in the day was supposed to be bulletproof, everything's okay, we don't show that side, for men in particular, man up, like we don't show the emotional side. And then you see the male suicide rates go so high, it's because of not touching into your heart and being able to share things and it be okay to be heard. So I feel it's my now duty of care to actually share that with people and be open and honest. And mean that I can make music and we can be super vulnerable about things because it's a true power to share these things, you know?
That's in theory, that was the plan. Now that you've done it, are you happy that you did? Are you happy that you're sharing those stories?
Yeah, man. It feels like it was cathartic to write things that were just emotions that were never really got dealt with. And as soon as you put that down, pen into paper, it's like you're owning it and seeing it for what it really is. And it brought up a myriad of emotions for me that I'd put underneath the rug that I thought, nah, we don't need to go there. But as soon as you bring it all up, and especially if you're doing it on a platform when it's in a book and many people can see it, it's a bit like, you know, when in Eminem in 8 Mile, there's when he has that battle and he just pours it all out so much that it actually, his vulnerability was his super strength. There was nothing anyone could come for you for. It's like, well, here it is. Everything is here. And it healed me doing that. And I just hope that it gives the same thing to other people because we're in need of it, man. Music is a form of therapy. It's always been that for me and for other people. But people speaking their truth. And the more of us that do that, the more everyone gets to be able to feel seen.
Yeah. It is an interesting thought process. Like it is, look, I told you about me. I've shared it. I've talked about it. I put it out there. Now what are you going to do? Like, you know, what else you got? Because I've already come out there and told my stories and my path to overcoming them and dealing with them. Yeah, it is. It is.
And it also feels that we're a lot more similar than we feel we are. We make out sometimes that, whoa, like, the different professions have this, like, you're so far, like, how can you, I don't know. But you tap into the human part. We all go through the same things. And it's just different ways and stories that are told that make us feel a little bit more connected than being so disconnected in life. Because that's all we want. When you get down to the heart of any depression, mental health, it tends to come back to not being seen. You're trying to be something that you're not, to be seen by the world, by your parents, by your siblings, by whoever, by your teacher, by your boss. When you're seen, it validates who you are. And then people can ease back in. They're like, I don't have to put this act on because it's hectic every day, putting the mask on every day you walk out the front door. Trust me.
Man, I appreciate your time. I'm looking at the clock and going, we've already been talking for half an hour. So I've got to. We end every episode of The Pulse with the concept of use your voice for good. Ask everybody the same question. What does using your voice for good mean to you?
For me, it gives purpose for being here. Like, what is this? What are we? Ask the question, what is this all about? Why are we here? And it's to help each other in whatever way we can, you know what I mean? So use that voice. I'll use it not just with a melody behind it, but in a conversation with you now, or it could be as simple as a smile to someone walking down the road. You don't know what, how, and what that may have done to change their life for the better. So it's vibes.
Guys, thanks so much for listening to the Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast today with international superstar Craig David, and just a really good dude, like sitting there having a conversation, sharing his stories. Think about it. This is somebody who sold out Wembley. That's hundreds of thousands of people. but now on tour chooses to do intimate venues so that he can interact with the crowd. He chose to do Tower Suite 5, which was his penthouse in Miami, and invite people into the house for parties that he was hosting. He talks about how the people who listen to his music matter to him, and then he lives it and shows it. And it was a pleasure to have a chance to have that conversation. Do me a favor, hit like, subscribe, follow, whatever it is you do to get notification the next time that a Pulse episode is posted. That's every Monday. Head over to Fox Local, download the app on connected and streaming TV. If you don't already have it, then all the episodes are right there at your fingertips. And you can always hit me up on social media at BillAFox29. I love to hear from you always. Well, almost always. Sometimes, yeah, that's a whole nother podcast. Anyway, I leave you today as I always do, reminding you that whenever you can, to use your voice for good and have a good one.